The opinions expressed on Breaking News Bears are individual and are not necessarily representative of Spirit Live or Toronto Metropolitan University. Thank you for listening.
Welcome to the Breaking News Bears podcast. I'm your host, Chris Capone, joined alongside my co-host once again, Evan Davis. And MLB free agency is slowly gaining some traction as the offseason progresses. Qualifying offers are being declined by free agents, awards are being announced for the previous season, and some trades are starting to be discussed, including one not too long ago earlier today involving the Cleveland Guardians and Chicago Cubs. Of course, a lot of the main free agents are still likely to wait until winter meetings to determine a spot to land. However, one piece of news that's really interesting is that the Los Angeles Dodgers were able to land a meeting with superstar free agent Juan Soto. So, Evan, I'll ask you this first. Do you believe there's any chance that Soto is a Dodger?
I have zero belief that Soto is a Dodger just because, well, one, like, I know it sounds, I mean, I would even hate that. Like, I don't want that at all. Like, I just, yes, it makes sense in terms of a timeline because he's only 26 years old. A lot of the Dodgers superstar players are getting up there in age. Like, Freddie's going to be 35, Mookie's going to be 32. And then obviously, if they either re-sign Teoscar, he'll be 33, around 34. I don't think it makes sense for them as well. I know they talked about putting Mookie Betts in the infield, which then kind of leaves an outlier for a guy like Gavin Lux, but I don't know. But then again, this is also why Ohtani wanted to defer all this money, was to build a gauntlet, and nothing says a gauntlet more than Ohtani, Betts, Soto, and Freeman. It almost just feels like you're creating a team with like salary cap. I mean, I guess salary cap is turned off technically in baseball, where it's like trades and everything is turned off, and you can just snatch players from wherever you want. So I think it would be cool, but I've also said numerous times that it just he feels right in the Yankee pinstripes.
Yeah, and it's just really getting Soto, like especially after last offseason where you had $1 billion spent on all the free agents they had gotten, and now you're adding an extra $600 million with Juan Soto. It's like the amount of money that's being poured into this team if they were to land Juan Soto, which I don't think is possible. I don't think, plus I don't think Juan Soto would do that just because even then he knows that he's definitely a second fiddle. If he's already a second fiddle to Aaron Judge and doesn't like that, then he definitely knows he's second fiddle to Shohei Ohtani and might even be a second fiddle to Freddie Freeman just because of the love that LA has for Freddie Freeman. It's just like, I don't think there's any way that this happens. I think it's a 0% chance, but I still think it's interesting that Soto's entertaining the idea of, hey, let me take a meeting with the Dodgers. Let me see what they think I'm worth and how this relates to other teams. Like he already had his other meetings with the other, Yankees, Blue Jays, Red Sox, Mets. Maybe the Dodgers were like, Soto, we'll give you $700 million as well, and we'll defer it for the next 50 years. But yeah, I think I still think there's like a 0% chance that Soto is a Dodger.
I don't really see it. I don't know. It's just, even from a competitive standpoint, it's just like, it wouldn't be fun at all. Like, and also, that's just so much more added pressure to a team that, like, yes, finally slayed the dragon. But it's almost like if the Dodgers had those four guys at the top of their lineup and they didn't win 120 games, like, just the media pressure as well. And I know, like, it's been like that for the last 12 years, and they always say it doesn't, you don't let it get to you. But, like, now that all these guys have podcasts and everything, and social media is like such a huge thing, like, you can't tell me that this internally doesn't put pressure on you to be at your best. And like, for Soto, and I don't get it. Like, everyone's saying, yeah, we had a great meeting with Soto, because what else are you going to say? No, it sucked, and like, we actually have zero intent on signing him. Like, I guess, like, I know the media is hungry for something, but of course, every meeting with this guy, they're going to say is good. I think he goes to either one of the two New York teams. I still don't understand the obsession in Boston with the media saying that they're going to spend like crazy. So I think and I also just don't think Steve Cohen lets him out of New York.
Yeah, I don't think there's any way that Soto is a Dodger, is a Red Sox at the very least. I think he's going to be a Met as much as I want him to be a Blue Jay. I want that Vladdy and Soto Dominican connection and at Rogers Center. But I don't think I really think it's unlikely that Soto actually will become a Blue Jay just because this team is so poorly run. But a team that's not poorly run is the Cleveland Guardians, where they ended up making a trade today with the Chicago Cubs, sending away Eli Morgan to Chicago, somebody who was a really big piece of their bullpen. Granted, he only played in 32 games this year, but he was really solid for them in the playoffs this year, coming in and pitching in big situations. What do you think about the deal? Obviously the Guardians bullpen is elite, and I think they might be, trying to make some moves to, kind of shorten up that bullpen, where they might be looking to add a starting pitcher instead to, add to their team instead of, relying on that bullpen so much.
Yeah, I think when you look at the Cleveland, I mean, first of all, the Cleveland Guardians, they don't need anybody else in their bullpen. When you already have Cade Smith, Hunter Gaddis, Tim Herron, you have Nick Sandlin, who quietly also had a really solid year for them. They do need another starting pitcher. And I think when you look at the Chicago Cubs, like, oh my God, I'm blanking out. I think Eli Morgan doesn't carry, like, he doesn't do anything really spectacular, but he's an innings eater that gets out of situations. Like, you look at his analytical stats, you look at his Baseball Savant page, it's nothing that really like jumps off the screen. Like, he has a 20% strikeout percentage, and then like a 6% walk rate, which like isn't terrible at all. It's solid for a middle reliever. But you look at the Chicago Cubs, their bullpen depth is atrocious. Like, they did get really good production out of Nate Pearson. Hector Neris signing was kind of a failure. That's why they let him go to Houston, back to Houston. You look at it, Porter Hodge was really solid as well out of the bullpen from then. But Azolay, I think, had surgery, if I'm not mistaken, or like he's not playing this year. So you needed a reliever, and a guy like Eli Morgan, if you need 2 innings out of him, it's what they did the same thing with Nate Pearson. Like, you could get innings out of him. And I mean, they only gave up an A ball level talent. So for a Chicago Cubs team that struggled mightily this, or not struggled mightily, but didn't exceed expectations the way we thought they would, I think picking up a really solid bullpen piece for like nothing is perfect for this team.
The Guardians didn't really get much in return. It was just a 20-year-old prospect, Alphonso Rosario, 21st on the Cubs' top prospect rankings. Like, it just seemed more like a deal where the Guardians didn't really need this extra bullpen piece, and they just decided, well, we can get someone relatively young who's just drafted last year in the sixth round.
I mean, you never know with these young guys, like, what they can end up becoming. And I'm sorry, Eli Morgan, I keep saying Cade Smith, Eli Morgan was kind of just like the odd man out in this bullpen that is loaded from top to bottom.
Quickly, I want to talk about, one of the most interesting things that happened from this past week were just the awards given out to the Rookie of the Year, where Kelvin Cowser was frankly robbed, and Luis Gil, who pitched in 2021, by the way, was given Rookie of the Year. Like, what an insane, it's just so weird with like service time and being pitching 3 years ago. This guy pitched against Kyle Seager and won Rookie of the Year in 2024. I just think, yeah.
I don't get it. Like, well, first of all, Colin Cowser, I would say, was fairly inconsistent at the plate. Like, when he went on a hot streak, he was lightning. No, he was really hot. Like, he would have streaks of where, maybe he goes like 6 for 10 in 1 weekend, or he'll go, like 7 of 12, like something like that. But then he also had streaks where it was like 0 for 21, where he was taken out of the lineup. Like, his batting average at the beginning of the year, and again, it's the beginning of the year, so like obviously your numbers aren't going to remain sustainable, but he did go from like a 325 batting average all the way down to like 258 at one point, which over the course of time, he definitely did struggle. With the service time though, like I don't understand that. I don't get how Luis Gil qualifies as a rookie. Like, I get this was his first full season, But like he's had cups of coffee in the major leagues before. Like he pitched in six games back in 2021. Like he threw 29 innings. I don't get how, like, I don't know what the cutoff is. Like obviously 29 innings isn't a lot, but 29 innings is still 29 innings. Like I don't get how you're not classified as a rookie.
Yeah, and he had an injury in 2023, which is the only reason that he didn't pitch. So it's just weird that he had Tommy John surgery in 2022 and then missed 2023 because of it. So it's been like this guy has been on an active or like on the 60-day IL list for on the major league team for multiple years now. And it's like I know he has to actually pitch in games, but he's been technically on the roster for 3 years before this year. And then just because he had to pitch a lot of games this year. Like, I'm fine with him. If this was like his first, or if this was just his second year, like he pitched the one game in 2022 and then missed 2023 and pitched. But he pitched in 2021. He had almost 30 innings. And like, this has been a guy who's been in the major leagues consistently since being called up. Like he's been pitching, like he pitched 2021, had the Tommy John surgery the year after, and that's the only reason he missed 2023. He would have been probably pitching 2023 last year if he didn't have that injury, but now he gets the rookie of the year, which I think it could even went to Austin Wells. Like it's just so weird that this guy, 26 years old, pushing 30, winning rookie of the year after having two previous major league stints.
Yeah, just so weird to me. And then when you look at the National League, like I didn't expect Paul Skenes to get that many first place votes. I don't know if it was just because of the media attention he got, but like even Ken Rosenthal said on the Foul Territory podcast that like he didn't think Paul Skenes would win. And I thought Jackson Merrill, like I didn't think Jackson Merrill would win just because of the value that Paul Skenes brought to the Pirates. It's kind of hard to say that Merrill outweighed Skenes. I know Merrill was an everyday player, yada yada yada, took over for Tatis, but like you still had Bogarts, you still had Profar, you still had Machado, you still had a lethal starting rotation and bullpen. Like you had a lot going for you, whereas like I think the Pirates won, I want to say like 9 of Paul Skenes' first 10 starts, or like they at least won his first 8 starts. Like he might not have been credited with the win, but they ended up winning the game. And but just to think that Jackson Merrill only got 3 first place votes kind of just feels like a slap in the face to him, because I don't think it was like that big of a, I don't think it should have been that big of a landslide. Like out of the 30 first place votes, I thought maybe Skenes would get like, call it even like 20, and then Merrill gets like 10, which is still like a fair landslide, but to have it be 27-3, like that just seems crazy to me.
Yeah, I mean, Paul Skenes definitely had, a lot more of the media attention behind him. Everyone was talking about Paul Skenes, and Merrill was just consistent throughout the whole year. Like there wasn't ever really a stretch where Merrill seemed like he really struggled. Like it just seemed like Merrill was consistent, never played a game in AAA and was promoted to the major league roster, played his first game in Korea a couple weeks before the season actually started. It just seemed like, Paul Skenes had, he has the TikTok fame, he has Livy Dunn, a lot of and he was the bigger name, and that's what made him, so much more popular and so much more thought of as like, oh, this guy's going nutty, this guy's going crazy. 11 strikeout game, his second, he threw a no-hitter, his second major league game with only one walk. And it's like stuff like that. If you can make an impression really early, I feel like that does a lot for keeping you in the mind of voters, even if you're on a team like Pittsburgh that isn't really doing much. If like Paul Skenes, like I said, his second career game against the Cubs, 11 strikeouts, no hits, and one walk in six innings. It's like, yeah, of course, people are gonna think about that and be like, yeah, Paul Skenes was really good. He's had multiple games like this. He had a game against Milwaukee. Same thing, 11 strikeouts, seven innings, no hits, one walk. And towards the end of the year, there was a report that the Pirates were thinking about shutting down Paul Skenes so that they could manipulate his service time, like we said with Luis Gil. But that would possibly cost him Rookie of the Year. But the Pirates said, you know what, screw it. Like, this guy's been so good for us this year. Let him get an accolade. And even it seems like Paul Skenes didn't care because at the awards ceremony, he's just like, it's cool talking about the
Yeah.
rookie.
Yeah, he's just like so nonchalant about it.
Yeah.
You do look at like war between the two, and I think like that's what the voters maybe also looked at. And you look at it like Paul Skenes had a 5.9 war as a pitcher. Merrill's war was 4.5. Like, I'm sure that also went into it. Just like having a 6 war as a pitcher, like we talked about, like Ohtani having a 9.5 as just a DH. Like, having one as a pitcher is insane. Like, that is, I think Chris Sale's was around that as well, if I'm not mistaken. Could have been even a little bit higher, but I know it was like, I know Chris Sale's, I'm pretty sure, started with a 6 at least.
6.2.
Okay, yeah, so he wasn't that far off. But yeah, I guess, you look at Skenes, he was 11-3 with a 1.96 ERA in 133 innings and had 170 strikeouts. We don't see that from, and he also joined late. Like, it felt like everything was going in the direction of Paul Skenes, especially when, he starts the All-Star game, the first pitcher to do that with like under 11 career starts. Now he's up for the Cy Young. I don't think he's going to win it. I think Chris Sale is going to, I think that might even also be a landslide where I don't get how you don't give it to Chris Sale, but it was just, I don't know. It's interesting. And I also kind of just feel bad for Jackson Chourio because, like, he kind of also got pushed off to the side, but like he quietly had a phenomenal season with the Milwaukee Brewers. And like, I'm really curious to see how high he even goes, like in fantasy baseball drafts this year, because I don't think any of one of us were really thinking that he could be like this 2020 guy with like 60, 70 RBIs, also hitting pretty consistent as well. So kind of feel bad for him. No one was really talking about him in like in any other year. They would be talking about him as well.
If he was in the American League, he would have been unanimous as
Yeah,
a
he would have been
Rookie of the Year.
unanimous in that, for sure, unanimous.
Yeah. So it's insane to see the depth of how much talent, young talent there is in the NL where, Jackson Merrill and Paul Skenes were just that much higher ahead that, Jackson Trujillo gets set aside when he had 3.8 WAR this past
Yeah.
year.
Yeah, like even that for a rookie is still impressive. Like, it means you're the team is winning basically because of you.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at all the other nominees for Rookie of the Year in the American League, his 3.8 WAR beats out Colton Cowser and Luis Gil, who both had 3.1. So he
Yeah.
would have probably have taken a majority of the votes there. It's just the talent level differential in, or at least among the rookies in the two leagues, is kind of crazy. And
Yeah.
next year, I feel like there'll even be even more when you think about like Dylan Cruz and,
Oh, does
other.
Jackson Holliday count, or he played too many games? Like, now I don't even know what the qualifications are.
I think Jackson Holliday will count. I don't think he played. Let me see how many big games he played. Yeah, he should count. I think he didn't hit the requisite amount. I think it's 250 plate appearances. His rookie status is still intact. So yeah, Jackson Holliday would count, but we've seen kind of his struggles. We don't know if he can actually, that lineup's still kind of stacked, and I don't even know where he would start on a opening day roster.
Yeah, you would be like hitting eighth or ninth. That's what makes it hard, even for like a guy like Merrill, because I never understood why they kept, like, he was always hitting like seventh or eighth in the lineup, like during the regular season. And then obviously in the postseason, they brought him up to like the five hole. But like, I would always look at it and, or like, he'd be hitting like sixth, seventh, like in the bottom half. It's like, I get your lineup is like deep, but Jake Cronenworth should not be hitting ahead of Jackson Merrill. They took away ribbies from him for Jake from State Farm.
But yeah, another thing about these awards, the Cy Young Award, especially in the American League, where Corbin Burnes not being among the among the recipients for nominees, it's still kind of nutty to see that he isn't up there, despite the incredible year that he had and, you know, 2.9 ERA. And I mean, it's Tarik Skubal's award. It's going to Tarik Skubal just because of the incredible year that he had. But still, it's like Emmanuel Clase is the first reliever to ever be nominated for the Cy Young, even though
No,
he's not
it's
winning
first
it.
time since like
Or
2008.
yeah, first time in a long time since to be nominated. But still, it's insane to see that, you know, Emmanuel Clase, basically, you never really see a reliever get this kind of consideration.
I was kind of surprised by Seth Lugo, and then, you know, our buddy Mateo posted in the chat like how their numbers weren't actually that far off, and Lugo's WAR was significantly higher. I mean, maybe there's like contractual things that went on where, or like that things that now impact Corbin Burns. I mean, then again, like that's with whatever he signed with Milwaukee, but. Like, yeah, you know, Burns didn't really start off the year hot. You know, he had a couple of stinker games, and I mean, to be fair, his bullpen also blew a bunch of potential wins from him. But there were a few like high walk or low strikeout games, and he didn't really ramp it up until the second half, whereas Seth Lugo was kind of like consistent throughout. So maybe that's what the voters felt like you would see games of Corbin Burns like six innings, which he always does, but only like three or four strikeouts. Like we're just not used to seeing that low of a K rate.
Yeah, and you know, he's probably going to be leaving Baltimore now because, you know, we talked about it earlier in the year. We're like, new management for Baltimore, you know, they've been aggressive and they're going to be more likely to re-sign him. But it just seems now that, you know, season's done and free agency's starting, the Mets look like a real, you know, contender to snatch him away from Baltimore or even a team like, I think he's more likely to go to Red Sox than any of the other big free agents that are being talked about. I think someone like Corbin Burns would be likely to go there. But yeah, you know, it's crazy to see Seth Lugo, you know, a career like he was in the bullpen for a while for New York, became a starter again with the Padres last year, and then, you know, age 35 season, Cy Young candidate. Crazy. The last thing I want to talk about are some of the qualifying offers that were declined. You know, obviously Juan Soto declined his qualifying offer, and it's no surprise there. But like players like Teoscar, also not a surprise. Were there any qualifying offers that were declined or accepted that you felt were surprising?
I would say the most surprising that was declined was Luis Severino. I just don't know what his market really looks like, and there's like reports out there that like maybe he gets a 3-year 60 something million dollar contract where, you know, he still gets the same AAV that he would get from a $21 million qualifying offer. It's just more job security. But I don't know. Like, I wonder what the market really looks like. This is a pitcher in Luis Severino that isn't gonna sign probably until I would say like maybe late December, early January. Like, I just don't really see a market in place for him. But it was interesting to see that. And I think the most surprising one as well was just like the lone person to take the qualifying offer, Nick Martinez from the Cincinnati Reds. Like, I get he's a solid pitcher, but like you offered him the qualifying offer. Like he wasn't a $21 million pitcher this year.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because you never really see that many people actually do accept their qualifying offers. And it's like, yeah, Nick Martinez getting the qualifying offer was kind of weird. You know, 34-year-old posted a 3.10 ERA over 142 innings, but it's like, yeah, Nick Martinez getting 21 million for the next upcoming season. Like, I know starting pitching is like a premium, but Nick Martinez. Anyways, I think that'll just about do it for this episode of Breaking News Bears. I once again want to thank my co-host Evan Davis. I once again want to thank you guys, the listeners. Thank you all again once for listening to another episode of Breaking News Bears.